Hello, everyone. I am Stephanie Lemick. I am the host of our Building Trauma-Informed Workplace podcast. I am so excited to have an amazing guest, an amazing person with us today, Emily Golden. And I will kick it over to you, Emily, to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Absolutely. Stephanie, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for the work that you're doing in the world. It is near and dear to my heart. So I am Emily Golden. I live outside of Philadelphia in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and I run my own business called Golden Resources, and we provide strategic talent advisory to our clients. This looks like individual one-on-one coaching, team coaching, group coaching, leadership development programs, different types of assessments, and essentially just meeting the client and supporting the client where the client is. And I am blessed to have clients across industries, various different sizes. And I would say that the hallmark of kind of the my client relationships comes down to relationships. So lots of referrals and amazing people that I get to support in this work.
I love that. And this makes so much sense because you are phenomenal at fostering relationships. Gosh, I think Emily and I connected when I first started my own entrepreneurship journey and have stayed connected through that. And fantastically, I remember we had a great conversation. It's probably been almost a year ago now, a great conversation about you as a coach. And you actually have a trauma-informed approach to coaching, which I think is so fantastic. So I would love, if you're comfortable, if you would share a little bit more around, you know, what that looks like and what drove you to become, you know, focused on how to proceed in a trauma-informed way as you're doing all of this.
Absolutely. So I came to coaching after 17 years climbing the corporate ladder in HR, only to realize there was something different for me to be doing in the world, but I didn't know what. And actually, it was a trauma that had me take a pause and look inward and ask myself, what did I really want to do professionally? I had recognized that there was an emptiness in me around my career. I was in autopilot, and I was doing a good job. And it was my daughter's diagnosis with Tourette syndrome that was that trauma. And it had me take stock of the entirety of my life, because life looks different when you recognize that you have a special needs child. So I found coaching after my own transformational explorative experience. And it was a few years into my coaching, after I had gotten certified and I had many clients that I was working with, I had this realization that many of my clients would get to a place in our work where they would kind of hit some resistance. So I realized that there was a common thread. I felt like there was a common theme. And I wondered, is there actually like a link to trauma? And knowing I had my own traumas, big T and little T, I started to do some exploration. And then this thing called COVID hit. And I suddenly was like, oh, I must learn a trauma-informed approach to coaching, because now not only will I like hit resistance because of things that people have experienced prior in our work together, I'm sure of that because I already have, but now there's this new thing and it's for sure going to create traumatic responses in certain people. And it was right around that time that the trauma-informed coach training program I wound up jumping into got online. The International Coaching Federation for the first time had deemed a trauma-informed training program qualifying for CCEUs, which basically means it's approved by the International Coaching Federation. And I jumped into this program and it was phenomenal. It validated so much of what I was seeing. So as a coach, I am trained to support people to disrupt patterns, automatic ways of being. I'm trained to support my clients to understand themselves at a deeper level, to generate that self-awareness, to recognize where survival mechanism gets in the way. And what I was missing in my training was what to do and how to be when someone became triggered or was having dysregulation in a session. Now, I intuitively knew that having created a safe container and being just being with the person was really what was called for. And unfortunately, in my own experience, being coach trained, it wasn't all the people that I trained with, but there were a few individuals that were missing some of that sensitivity around the trauma awareness. And it wasn't their fault. They just didn't know. Like, when we know better, we do better. And so they would continue to push in certain places that for me were really destabilizing. And so I didn't want to be that with my clients. And now this trauma-informed lens actually impacts everything I do, how I parent, how I relate to my friends, how I work with my clients, whether they're coaching clients or organizations that I'm supporting. It's so incredibly impactful. And it also has me recognizing my own traumas that, you know, and I uncover new experiences that were traumatic for me as I move through my life. And it doesn't have to be this big deal, but it's like, oh, this situation that happened to both my sister and I, we were both in it together. I actually had a trauma response. She did not. That doesn't make me weak. That doesn't make me bad. That just means that my body reacted to the trauma. It's such a fascinating area. And I think that organizations must bring trauma-informed leadership in to the workplace. And I say must because I truly believe that organizations that don't have that capability in years to come will not be able to survive.
I think it's so, I mean, there's so much there that you talked about. I'm so excited. I hate hearing that anyone's experienced trauma, but it's a fact of life for just about everyone. I love your example about an experience you and your sister shared and having such different responses. I think that that is something that gets so confusing for folks, and it makes it really complicated when they go, well, how do I know if someone's experienced trauma? How do I know if someone's having, a trauma response? And it's just like, it depends. I swear it's probably one of my favorite phrases as a former HR leader, you may relate, but it depends. We're all unique. We have all these different experiences we're bringing with us. And a lot of times it isn't about specific qualities or weakness or anything like that. It's about what is our body doing and how our body is reacting, because it's on autopilot when we have a trauma response. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely love that example. I think that is so insightful and a lived insightful experience. I so frequently reference the COVID-19 pandemic as, hey, here's this one singular event, this global event that we all experienced, but we all experienced it really differently. And I mean, you brought it up. Well, COVID was kind of that moment you found yourself and, you know, a certification available at the same time. I think it's so interesting how much COVID pushed trauma to the surface in terms of discussions. You know, even for myself personally, I hate to say I had a relatively easy pandemic experience, but I did. I got to go work from home. You know, none of my loved ones got seriously ill. And a lot of people had much more traumatic experiences, much more, you know, direct, you know, getting ill, having significant aspects of their lives change a lot. And, you know, still for me, I felt my traumatic responses, my traumatic experiences still bubble up in that time period. And I think that's true for a lot of people, whether they experienced, you know, a specific event during the height of the pandemic, or if it was just that continual, you know, challenge of unknown, that continual challenge of watching, you know, people experience traumatic events on the news, on social media. It really kind of brought trauma to the surface in so many ways. And I'm grateful that a lot of what has happened in response is people talking about it, people feeling more prepared, people being ready to kind of trauma inform every aspect of their lives, which it's so important because sometimes we don't even recognize when we're in a trauma response and, you know, in the moment, because it is so interesting, so different.
And I think as it relates to the workplace, having children who, my son was in fifth grade and my daughter was in ninth grade when the pandemic hit. They have, and if you think about just what has gone on in the past 20 years, right? The number of traumas like that are within the possible realm. Not that every one of these events has been a trauma for every one of these children, but we can pretty much assume that children today have faced a level of trauma at some point, right? And so I think about my kids and I think about their peers and I think about what, I mean, this thought of what's going on college campuses right now, and that those kids are the very same kids who had graduation taken away from them when they, because of COVID. And our workplaces, these kinds of things that are happening, whether they be pandemics, political unrest, war, right? These things, unfortunately, are not going away, at least anytime soon. And they will continue to impact us and our nervous systems. And if our workplaces are not prepared to be able to handle this, and I'm not asserting that that workplaces need to be everything for, you know, someone, there's outside resources and whatever, but the leaders inside organizations need to be educated on what trauma does and how their direct reports reactions may be a result of trauma that has been unprocessed, that they're not making assumptions or, you know, reading into things as this person isn't capable. It's like there might actually be something real that's being triggered in this person.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, it's so telling when you talk about Gen Z. I feel like I talk about Gen Z all the time. And I mean, for good reason. I think Gen Z's expectations of the workplace really push the concept of a trauma-informed workplace forward. I also think our very changed relationship with work holistically, kind of those two meeting at the same time, are really powerful. And it's a great opportunity for change. One thing for me that I don't know, it's just my own personal experience. Trying to empathize with Gen Z, it's, yes, we all experienced the pandemic, but the point in our lives when we experience something matters. And there's so much research, there's so much information around development and how that matters. I mean, I relate to thinking about the pandemic as, you know, when I was a freshman in high school was when September 11th happened. And, you know, you were alive during September 11th, you have the memory, you have that relationship. There was something about that moment though, for me, and that developmental stage where it really was just like, to this day, I'm like, I don't know what's up with me. I have this unresolved like September 11th trauma. Like I was living in Nebraska at the time. It wasn't like there was a direct connection. It was, you know, just a understanding of like my whole world turning upside down, or just a total change in expectation. And that was, you know, a single event. Certainly the repercussions played out for many months following, even years. But when you look at COVID, that played out for years in like a real restrictive everyday kind of way. I'm like, that's a big deal when you're in junior high, when you're a teenager, when you're in college, and you have this moment and all of a sudden it's completely different.
It's like a moment when you have this awareness that you're not safe the way you thought you were.
Yes. It's perfectly put. Absolutely. You know, yes.
And I think about my kiddos and I think about their friends and I think about the impact of that. So yeah, more work around just being real about these things.
Absolutely. And I think too, it's interesting because, you know, the level of discourse during COVID, I mean, I'm out here in Arizona, so discourse was happening the whole time. I think when you're a teenager, when you're in college, you are having those discussions at some level still. You're kind of digging in, you know, on what you think is right, your perspective, you're interested in being heard. This is a generation that can be heard at any point because of social media. And I think you have folks who are really willing to dig in and stand up for their thoughts, what they believe in, like you referenced with a lot of the protests going on right now on college campus. So these employees, I mean, I had to stop myself. I was ready to make a post on LinkedIn the other day, like all of these students protesting on college campuses, next stop is your company. Mm-hmm. Like they're going to graduate. They're going to, yep, you know, move on into the next phase of their life. Well, that's employment for a great majority of them. So are you ready for that very different kind of perspective, that very different expectation on, I have a perspective, I want to be heard, I'm kind of digging in. And when we talk about mental health, being trauma-informed, talking about really tough stuff, Gen Z, you know, by and large, is very insistent on that happening in the workplace.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. You mentioned something that I think, again, this is something that a lot of us experience, you know, through COVID, post-COVID, I did myself in doing exactly what you mentioned earlier, recognize that role of work and life, like they weren't where we wanted them to be. And so, you know, as someone who has built, you know, this amazing business over the course of these years, and looking back at that moment where you kind of trying to work through, hey, I'm ready for a change, I want to change, what advice or perspective do you have to offer someone who is kind of rethinking their career, or rethinking how work fits in their life, or even recently just made a big change and would love to hear from someone who's, you know, been successful at it?
The very first thing is that if you don't know where you're going, you can't expect to get there. So you need to be really clear about what you want. Now, I'm not suggesting that you be clear about the 3, 5, 10-year arc of your business. Like, I was not clear about that. However, I was clear about what my key values are, my values are. And amongst my values were freedom, family, and being able to take care of myself, my own health. And so knowing that these things were important to me and that I wanted to create a business, it gave me things to anchor into. Okay, will this type of business, will a coaching business provide me what I needed? Oh, the other F there was financial stability, because my husband and I are both partners in supporting this family. And especially when you have children, both of my children with Tourette syndrome and different special needs, we've got expenses, and I needed to make sure I was making a certain amount of money. So being clear about what you want, where you're going, so that you can plot the course to get there, making sure that you are amply supported to get there. it is no fair going it alone. You will burn out, sabotage yourself, whatever. And it's unnecessary. So I had and have a group of champions, including multiple coaches for myself and a community of people who are up to big things in their life, right? So knowing where you're going, having the support structure, and the next thing I would say is resilience. So doing the work to bounce back, because you will be knocked down and it will be your autopilot, your survival mechanism will say, throw in the towel, go back to what you were doing. It's a sure thing. Just suck it up. You were never meant to do this. Like all of these things have played through my head, and being able to get back to why am I doing this? Why is this so important? Where I'm going and why is it so important? And then being able to root into that support structure of the people to remind me, hey, just remind me why I'm here. And it is true that things get better with time. And, you know, one of my very first coaches said to me, emotions are not a great indicator of your heart's desire. Your commitment is. Your emotions will come and go, Emily. Your commitment is the thing that will stay the anchor.
I love that. That's so good.
It's so brilliant. Sarah Olin is the one who said it to me.
That's amazing. I think, too, what's so interesting, I've been reflecting on this a lot. It's been, you know, almost 2 years now into my entrepreneurship journey. And I would say, It ebbs and flows. There are those moments where you're like, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing? What was I thinking? And then there are some moments where you're like, this is amazing. I love this. And one thing that stood out to me is, you know, in corporate environments, especially in like really big corporate environments, which is where I started my career, it's really competitive. It's like this competitive, like, how can I get to the top? Who can I climb over? Like kind of like icky sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, it is going to be so competitive when I become a consultant, because we're all going to be fighting over work, fighting over clients. 100% not at all. At least in my experience. My experience has been, hey, how can I help you? How can I support you? People reaching out, like so much like kindness and support, especially from other women in my network, I will say. And it is like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. So I love what you say about you don't have to do it yourself. You don't have to go alone. There are people probably already in your life who want to find ways to help support you. And then there are also resources out there to support you as well, so you can keep getting better. Because when you are an entrepreneur, at least for me, I know my weaknesses or my opportunities, they stare me down hard in my face, and it can be tough. Yeah. And there's also lots of people out there, like this is such a little one, but I am not a detail-oriented, organized person. That I wish I was. I am not. I'm a big picture gal. I'm kind of all over the place. This is not helpful when you own your own business. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how do I get better organized? Someone in one of my networks was like, oh, you need to get on Asana because a little unicorn pops up when you complete a task. It'll make you feel really happy. And you know what? It is so silly, but it's helped me a ton. I'm like, this little simple thing, this simple piece of advice. And I'm so grateful. And there's so many people out there ready to do that. And there's so many other resources, like you said, a coach, you know, different networking communities. There's so much out there to get support and kind of bolster those things that stare you down, as I like to say, that are natural best traits or strengths.
I love that. And I always say to people, if you are wanting to go out on your own and become an entrepreneur, be prepared to be doing your work on you and being the most evolved version of yourself every single day, because it is a call forth to work on those areas that no matter what, will come along with you. And you know, to your point about being a big picture person, the key is to know who you are and know how you are, and then get yourself supported in the business, whether it be through the right technologies, the right people to fill in the gaps and to be, you know, my business manager, she operates in her zone of genius. I operate in my zone of genius. My virtual assistant, same thing, you know, so knowing that is so critically important. And I also want to say, Stephanie, that I was like you when I went out on my own as a coach, or when I first started coaching, even before I went out on my own, I couldn't believe how willing my peers that I was training with were to help me to find clients. And that was the first experience I had working where people really wanted to help you. And I did not have that in my corporate life by and large. I mean, there were some people along the way here and there, but it was mostly like, look out for yourself, make sure you're, you know, there's like only this much of the pie. We're all eating from the same pie. Now it's like support, support, support. I mean, many of my clients have come from relationships with other coaches and consultants, and likewise, it feels so good to be able to refer someone else, and to receive that referral. It's so, so powerful.
And isn't it weird? Like, how weird is it? And I've heard this from more than just you and me. Like, you go out on your own and you expect it to be more competitive, and it is like, oh no, let's all get together and work together. Like, that's what you would imagine an internal team would be doing. And it's more evident when we're all out there kind of on our own going, well, okay, let's figure this out. And oh, here's this group of people that I want to figure it out with.
Perhaps this is because there is trauma inside many organizations, that this competitive trauma has really permeated. And like, what if, how cool would it be if in 5-10 years from now, workplaces were this way, where, and I know that there are some, I'm not saying that there aren't. It's just, unfortunately, my experience is it's the minority.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it would be, you know, we talk about, you know, trauma informed, we talk about psychological safety, we talk about trust and transparency. And then there are some organizations doing it really well. But then, like, it gets back to this, like, hate to say old school, but like this old idea of work, and that it's really competitive. And, you know, you're graded on a bell curve, like the old GE bell curve, like layoff thing. And I think, you know, some of it does, it gets to be fear. I think a lot of folks I've talked to, especially in the recent, you know, year and a half, have had really terrible experiences related to layoffs. And I think, you know, talk about something that would color how you show up in your next job or future jobs thereafter. How are organizations, you know, thinking about people who've experienced the layoff and what that meant to them?
Yeah, I say that leaders and organizations are doing two jobs. One they may not even be aware of. The second job, aside from their day job, is to protect themselves from being really seen and found out and known, because there's fear. There's so much fear of being found out. You know, I mean, we hear it referred to as all different things, imposter syndrome, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I really truly believe that there's an opportunity to normalize that being in competitive environments wears on you.
Yes.
And it can be exhausting. And we can strive for excellence without having to knock each other off the pedestal.
Right. Especially we think about external consultants, coaches, entrepreneurs aren't knocking each other off the pedestal. To me, there's nothing more evident than it's possible to do this. And I'm hopeful that this is something that we see expand much more widely as we see, you know, more trauma-informed workplaces, a better kind of future of the workplace, which I think regardless of how it turns out, the future of the workplace is getting figured out right now. Mm-hmm. I always kind of use the analogy that, you know, COVID, all the remote work, all the things that happened over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, it was like someone taking a snow globe and shaking it up. And maybe we put it down, but those snowflakes are still kind of settling. Things are still kind of settling in. And I think we can really shape what that looks like, regardless if we don't decide to shape what it looks like. Something new will appear and maybe we won't like it. So it's just, it's something similar I say to organizations that are scaling really quickly. Your culture will change as you grow, especially exponentially. If you're not thoughtful about it, if you don't think about it, if you don't try to point it the direction you want it to go, it's going to change. If you're not thoughtful about it, you might end up something you don't really like or don't want. So it's an interesting time for sure.
It is.
It is. Perfect. So Emily, I love earlier, you know, when you were talking about becoming a trauma-informed coach and how really you use that lens now in all aspects of your life. I so appreciate that because I think that is something we can absolutely do. We can kind of trauma-inform everything and kind of carry it with us and how we approach different scenarios. So if you had a tip or a couple of tips for someone who was looking to, you know, use that trauma-informed lens more often or have a more trauma approached in their day-to-day life, whether it's at work or, you know, with their family or loved ones, what tips do you have as someone who's been practicing it for several years?
This is a simple one to say, and it's a more challenging one to practice, but I think it's so powerful. And that is what we call perspective taking. So when you're interacting with someone and it's a challenging interaction, or you're noticing that you're making assumptions about what's going on for the other person and what the other person is thinking, pause, take a moment and ask yourself, what might be going on? If I were standing in that person's shoes, what else might be happening? And what else might be happening? And what else might be happening? And then ask yourself, if a news reporter or a police officer rolled up to this scene and was just reporting on the facts, what are the facts and only the facts? This helps to strip away the interpretations and the stories that we make up. So perspective taking what the other person might be thinking, feeling, and then what like the facts are. I use this all the time with my clients, and I also use it with my daughter, to the point that she called me from college the other day and was very upset about something that had happened with a friend. And immediately I heard her perspective take. Well, Mom, I mean, I really don't know what's going on for her. I think that there might be something she's not telling me that is upsetting. I think that she's also stressed because of a final she's taking. And I was like, beautiful work, sweetie. And not that any of that was right. It just caused her to pull herself out of the spin of being done to by this person. Mm-hmm. And instead was able to say, huh, maybe there's something else going on here. So that is the simple hack. And it's not easy, but it is simple.
I love that. I think it's so powerful because, like you said, it's that pause. I think so often, especially when we're kind of engaging in an emotional response, we're reacting. And there's no like, okay, let me take a step back and, you know, look at the facts or put myself in this other person's perspective. Like, what else could be going on here? I think so often we're just like right here and then reacting. I love that. And it is hard, but I think it's also something that with practice, like you said, like your daughter, it can become kind of a natural, hey, let me take a beat and do this perspective taking. Love that.
And it doesn't mean that the way you're feeling is wrong, and it doesn't take anything away from the experience you're having. It's very easy, though, and you'll relate to this, to get righteous when we feel that someone is doing something wrong, bad, not performing, whatever, to get righteous about it. And mm-hmm. anytime my client or my kid rolls up with that righteousness, I know we are in survival mechanism, and you know, we do some deep breathing and then we go into some perspective taking once we're ready.
I love that. I love that you use that term righteousness, because I think that that is such, like you said that, and I was like, oh my gosh, yes. I can think of moments in my career where I was like, oh,
Yeah.
And that righteousness was right there. And I mean, I think, you know, HR professionals especially can think about that, where it's like, oh, like this is really what you're going to do. And it's never a helpful reaction.
And our righteous survival mechanism actually loves to go out and find evidence. So we'll call people who we know we can collude with, like,
yes,
go look into this, you know, just something to watch out for.
That's so good, because I think, you know, I always say I am lucky. I am privileged to have had a licensed therapist point out my trauma responses showing up for me at work. A lot of people do not have that opportunity and don't have that space to make those connections. Hearing, like, feeling yourself get a little righteous. Oh, let me stop. Why? Like, let me examine the why. Why am I jumping to this response? Because I'm thinking of examples in my head and I'm like, oh yes, yeah, Stephanie, that absolutely is connecting to a trauma response for me. That's an excellent key. I love that, Emily.
A golden nugget.
Yes, a golden nugget. Best name ever.
Thank you.
So I love that this has been such a fantastic conversation. I'm not surprised at all. Every conversation I have with you is fantastic. I'm so glad we could share it with my listeners today. I would love to, if folks want to learn more about you, your work, you know, want to follow you on social media or newsletters, how can they find out more about you and your work?
Absolutely. So I didn't mention the book that I wrote. So I have two children and then I have a book baby, which I put right in the middle of the mix there because it had a longer gestation period. But nonetheless, it was a creation. And so the book is called The New Golden Rule. And if you're interested in this approach, now I got certified as a trauma-informed coach after I wrote the book. Just like anyone, you know, after I put the book out, I'm like, there are a million things I would have done differently if I wrote the book today. So that means that there's another book baby in there that will be coming out. The new golden rule is out, but who knows what the second one will be? Maybe the newer golden rule. So you can reach me at golden-resources.com. That is my website. I'm also on LinkedIn. That's where I play. That's my platform of choice, Emily Golden. And yeah, I'm happy to hear from anyone anytime. Emily at golden-resources.com is my email address.
Amazing. Amazing. Emily, thank you so much. This was such a phenomenal conversation. It is always so enlightening to have other folks who are engaged in trauma-informed work join us. So I'm so grateful for your time and your insights. I definitely have a couple of tips that I'm going to be using from this conversation as well. And for our listeners, thank you for joining us. And until next time, be well.